You are tuned in to a Fireside Chat with Zany Mystic. Join us now on another exciting metaphysical journey. Relax, tune in, drop out, and take a seat by the fire as we explore new realms and possibilities. This is Magenta Pixie. You can find me at magentapixie.weebly.com. But now, here is Zany Mystic and guest. Enjoy the show.
Greetings, everyone, and welcome to A Fireside Chat with Zany Mystic. I am your host, Lance White. Tonight, my guest is Cliff High. Cliff is best known for his work with the WebBot project at halfpasthuman.com. First established to assist in analyzing market trends, it was soon noticed that other trends were beginning to reveal themselves in the nature of future events, which had been revealed through linguistic models. The WebBot project began and was affectionately referred to as the Rickety Time Machine. It has a high success rate, including the event known as 911, and we'll find out more from Cliff the actual details about how all of this evolved and what is in store for us in the near future. So, let's welcome Cliff to the show now. Hi, Cliff. How are you?
I'm doing just fine.
Oh, good, good, good. Well, I ordered and read your report, your latest report. It's called The Shape of Things to Come, and it is worth every, I mean, it's not an expensive report to purchase, and I think everybody ought to invest in it. It's quite an interesting read.
They have a tendency to be very text-dense, but yes. Contain some interesting insights, yes.
Yes, very interesting insights. Now, did I get that more or less accurate that you began by trying to analyze the market trends in order to play the stock market or to invest?
Yeah, pretty much. I was employed as a software engineer and basically a software troubleshooter on large projects for some consulting companies that were dealing with SQL Server and a few of the first 3 and 4GL object-oriented programming languages.
Okay.
All of which is kind of moot, but it suddenly dawned on me in like 96 or so that, the stock market in no way is run on logic. It's all emotional. And it was like, well, after that big duh moment, it was like, oh, well, geez, if I can just figure out the emotions that are associated with the stock, maybe I can get there ahead of the crowd, and thus, you know, I've always been told that's how people make money on the stock market, so it seemed like a good thing to do.
Right.
But I got derailed instantly. I had started off, and it was just curious, though, being in the computer business, I know all the kinds of computer companies. I needed an example company to look for their emotions around their stock, and so I chose this company called Sun, which stood for Stanford University Network.
Oh.
And it was one of the early networking firms, and they did some really interesting software that I liked and so on, and a lot of Unix-based stuff, and so I was tracking them. And, of course, SUN is also what we call the big scary fireball in the sky. And I started picking up far more information about the actual giant energy source for our solar system than I was for the computer company. And so I quickly got distracted and forgot all about the stock market part. Although, to my credit, I did wise up and retool all of that and use it in early 2000 to get out like two or three weeks before the big crash. I think we sold our few 4 or 5 shares of Microsoft stock at like 2 weeks before they actually peaked. So, you know.
Wow. Well, good. Good. So then you went on to begin to tweak and perfect this and expand your database to see what kinds of information might be coming might be gleaned from the internet. Is that accurate?
That's correct. And we don't do it off of conscious discussions, and we don't do things like emails. We use as our data source, what we do is just going out and basically read forums and other areas where people congregate and leave bits and pieces of information about common everyday subjects.
Uh-huh.
And then we aggregate these in terms of the number and where they're found and so on until we get these giant thick syrupy mass of words from which we extract archetypes, and then it's from the archetypes that we actually make forecasts. And basically the theory is that everybody is psychic to some degree, just like everybody has hair on their head to some degree, right? Since we're all so variable as humans, and there's billions of us out there, and probably hundreds and hundreds of millions that are connected to the internet, then I figured since we're all psychic, some of that's got to leak out, and it's just question of what we're picking up. And we apparently have, as I worked through the code and stuff, I got to the point where my filters were getting good about picking up what we call nonlinear associations. That is to say, not a straightforward association. And so it's like the quirky side of data mining. Sometimes in data mining projects, like for large car companies, they may say, well, we've proved by definitively with our data mining that on the day that the assistant sales manager for the restaurant over there wears a yellow tie, will sell two cars. And it's like, maybe that's actually true, maybe, but it is statistically irrelevant to their business because they can't force the manager to wear the yellow tie, and it doesn't happen every single time, but it was statistically relevant enough that they got it in the data mining. And so I started picking up things like that, and we just started making future projections, and the universe started putting some actual future events behind our words, which made us all look like we knew what we were doing.
What was the first major event that you were able to pick up? And I'm guessing that because the language isn't always direct, it doesn't speak directly about what's happening, it might speak around something, or it might use language that is obtuse or parallel. Like a ship might refer to a plane or...
Correct, because there's an archetype of transportation. And basically, we do this as a drilled-down kind of thing. So we would pick up the larger word group of transportation, and then as we drill down into the details, we start getting into the areas where we're actually starting to guess a little bit. Like we get an archetype that says going to be a big transportation accident. Mm. Well, then we look down at the next layer of detail, and we've got two or three or four areas to look at, and maybe we choose one, and it's inappropriate. And so we think there's going to be a marine accident. And instead, if we'd picked a smaller data set that was related to, say, space, for instance, we might have been accurate in stating that we were going to have, you know, the Columbia spaceship problem, when in fact what we actually said was there was going to be a, you know, planetary impact from a marine disaster. Well, and of course, Columbia, gem of the ocean, you know, all of these kinds of associations, we were just off. I just picked the wrong data set under this transportation accident that was going to cause this big emotional upset. Bear in mind that what we actually do, through a method of my own devising, I assigned a numeric value to emotional ranges and attached those to words. And so really what I do is I go through and I look through the data sources and I find emotional hotspots and hope that I find the correct emotional hotspots that go with the archetypes. The archetypes are usually correct, but the details can be a little goofy in terms of, you know, I didn't pick the smaller subset because it didn't seem logical at the time. There wasn't that much data there. But had I done so, we would have had a very accurate description of the space shuttle, but we probably would have done an interpretation that said that it was going to be blown up over the Middle East because of all of these relationship issues that had to do with what people would call the Holy Land because of all those kind of language. And in fact, much of the debris came down in Palestine, Texas, which is also spelled as Palestine.
That's right.
See, I would have been wrong at that level again if we dropped down. Now, some of these things I go back and look at, and I think, aha, if only, you know, if I could have only picked that one. But it helps the next time.
So the next time
we come up with something where there's four large sets and one small set with some really hot words, well, I go and I look at that small set, even if I'm, you know, just to be sure.
Yeah. And you're learning how, you're probably intuitively now picking up more of the accurate, you're being led towards the accurate data now because you've been doing this for such a long time.
That's correct. For over 10 years, we've had it as a real active continuing process. It took a couple of years to develop the software, and I mean, literally probably 2 years of doing other work. I was sitting around coding this stuff in my spare time.
Wow.
And then I've been running it really solid since 99, and real continuously since 2003. So, yeah, you're probably correct. I'm sure that I'm actually getting better at making those guesses.
Yeah. Now, one of your biggest hits, and I'd be curious to find out how it came out linguistically, was that you picked up prior to 9-1-1 that there would be an event. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, I don't actually think of that as our, quote, biggest hit, because we were accurate only to say 65% of the linguistics, and I was off on the time. Again, okay. That was one of those things where I'd had the time scale. First off, we posted this stuff on George Ure's urbansurvival.com. I posted a little, oh, I don't know, maybe 300 words or so in a little brief paragraph form called Screwy Theory 153. Okay, and it was because I was actually, this particular project was the 153rd little idea I'd written down in this book of ideas that I'd been keeping, right?
Yeah.
Okay, and so I started doing this, and I wrote this up for George Ure. We posted it on a site, I think in June. It was like probably June 11th or 12th of 2001. And I stated in there that we were going to hit a tipping point. That's at the high archetype level. I knew that the planet was going to hit a tipping point, or rather humanity was,
okay.
That would affect the whole planet, and things wouldn't be the same thereafter. So I was correct about that. And then within that data set that we pulled up, I had some interesting words going towards the idea of the money center of the planet being affected or attacked. And so I was correct about that, because the Twin Towers were indeed the center of the North American money industry, which is also the center of the global money industry. And then that's when we started to degrade a bit. And that is to say that I had words for an accident involving the military. And it was because we did not have the word terrorism modeled. At that point, I think I was only into M. I started off with 300,000 words, and I in an English language lexicon, just all these words, and I was in the process of going through them, mainly all of the emotive nouns, adjectives, and adverbs, and quantifying and qualifying the emotional parameters for that word. And it just takes a long time to do that, many of them. And I'd started in, like, I think 96 on that, or 97. In any event, though, by the time that we got to 2001, because I'd basically been doing it part-time, I'd only done into the far end of the M's, or maybe into the N at that point, and not T, so I didn't have the terrorism word. And then the other error I made was that the way that I'd set up the emotional parameters in terms of when they were going to impact, it was my guess in 2001, when we first posted that the tipping point event that was going to change life forever would actually occur closer to June than it would to the end of the range, because I said, well, I said 85 or 95 days this thing's going to occur, and the level of probability places it more likely within the first 15 days of this period than within the last 15 days. And basically what I'd done was I'd gotten my numbers reversed. If I'd reversed the scale, I would have been accurate in predicting that it would occur in the last 15 days of that period, which would have been, of course, September 11th. So there were errors as we were going through, just because I didn't know. I was just making a stab at it and seeing where we were at. And I've adjusted some of that stuff as we've gone further. And every time we get a really good example of being accurate at one level or two levels or even three or four levels, I try and go back and see where we could have been more accurate, and that's what we call tuning the lexicon.
Mm-hmm. Well, now you said you had some even better examples of success rates.
That's true. The one that was...
I think that I'm supposed to tell people to tune into the secondary streams, because the show is getting so many hits that they're having to open up another channel. So if that's correct, tune into the secondary streams, because there are a lot of people listening right now.
Yeah, and apparently we can get some others on, and we can cram some more people on their servers here and really suck electricity out of their little operation there. Anyway, I'll continue here on that thought.
Yeah, please do.
Okay, the one I really liked was in terms of linguistics, where we were very, very, very accurate with the words, was the Northeast power outage that occurred a few years back, because we were... I'd taken that out of what we call immediacy data, and immediacy data is data that's going to predict the future from 3 days out to about the end of a third week, so very short term. And we usually get lots of details in a very tight association to an archetype. And so we had the terrorism word. We had, now let's also stop and realize that there was no official acceptance of the idea that the power outage was caused by terrorism, but the minute it occurred, in 2003 or whenever it was there, everybody instantly thought it was terrorism. And so they wrote about terrorism the day after, and in that sense, we picked up the terrorism word associated to the Northeast power outage, even though it was wrong, it was correct in that underlying sense.
Right.
And since we deal with linguistics, that's really what we get. It's as though we'll be able to look at a newspaper in which there's an article about the event as opposed to actually getting a description of the event itself. And from that view, dim view of this future newspaper, so to speak, that's where we extract the linguistics. And the Northeast power outage, I think we actually ended up with like 97% of the words that we used to describe that event were commonly used in the reporting of that event on that day and the following days. So it's like we were really puffed up on that one. Whereas, for instance, on the 9/11 thing, we got maybe 61% or something, enough to be accurate at the archetype level, but not sufficiently so in the detail to make it, you know, actionable or really noteworthy, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does make sense. Well, even the Stanford Egg Project, I think, picked up massive shifts in energy prior to
9/11,
and that validates what we're saying about the idea that there is... that our idea of time and future and past is, we hold it as linear, but it may not actually be linear in nature.
Yeah, as we're fond of saying, it don't work that way.
Exactly.
Yeah, and another thing, though, too, is the Stanford Egg Project and their ability to pick up the emotional surge in a giant wave some, I think, 8 hours maybe, or even perhaps a day before. I'm not really sure the time parameters.
Mm-hmm.
But even so, it doesn't matter. My point on that is that it actually speaks more to the nature of consciousness than it does to time per se, if that makes sense. And so it actually aids us in defining the consciousness field that we all live in or that we're all part of.
Now, we're going to start getting into, because we've got about 45 minutes left, I don't want to ignore some of the things that you have come up with that now that you have a pretty decent track record, not that this is totally accurate, but this is something that certainly, as far as I can tell, provides major clues to possible experiences that are on the horizon. And
I'd say that's a fair assessment. And another way I like to say it is that we're about twice as good as academic version of chance would allow. Which means, though, we're wrong 50% of the time.
Well,
but, you know, it's better than a weatherman, so hey.
Well, you know, tarot cards, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
There's so much here in this data set, and some of the more interesting things have to do with events that are starting around 2009, moving into 2010, and... I don't know quite where to start. It looks like one of the major events that seems inevitable, just from a logic standpoint, is the fall of the dollar. And that there's a lot that indicates that there will be some kind of collapse of the monetary system.
And that's pretty much the case. We have to be, you know, I have a tendency to... being a linguist and being aware of the emotional impact of words on individuals, I try not to use fear words, and I try and dampen that down. I want everybody to be prepared. There's, you know, going to be some nasty times ahead, but it doesn't mean we can't kick back and sort of, you know, chill and watch it all unfold. We needn't participate in the negative energy and magnify it. We can take another approach.
Yeah.
And so it actually helps to discuss these things in a rather, let's say, dispassionate view.
Yeah.
But you're quite correct. Some really nasty things are going to occur, especially relative to the dollar, and there's so much globally that's tied to it. And even at a very high level in terms of our view of archetypes, but at a very deep emotional level, the dollar is fundamental to a paradigm that is in the process of dying and a new one being born. So the paradigm that we have is also being affected here and is going to go away, and that paradigm... it has really been pumped globally since the 50s and the emergence of the corporate version of advertising, where advertising took on a life of its own. But the paradigm basically is the idea of chasing the abstraction of the dollar. That's going to go away over the course of this next year. Now, in the process of that, the dollar itself is a mechanism of trade currency, and then a dollar is a support for such weird other abstractions as derivatives and central banks and that kind of thing, and even warfare All aspects of our lives are going to be affected by this because we're all going to lose confidence in the dollar. And that's going to be rather harsh to deal with because there is not an immediate replacement, and yet we have nearly 7 billion people on the planet that need to trade with each other, and it's going to be kind of hard to use, you know, rocks or socks or seashells or something as a replacement.
Yeah.
And so we got to get some other kind of mechanism going here. However, it starts off, actually, the last phase of the dollar that we're going to be into actually started on August 22nd in that week. And there was this little emotional peak period that sort of flattened out into a plateau from the 16th to the 22nd. And in that period of time, there was some language that leaked out about derivatives, which was one of our temporal markers. Language came in the Wall Street Journal above the fold, and it discussed the next phase of the banking crisis being related basically to these derivatives. And so it's like, aha, our temporal language is spot on. In fact, we even got some compliments from some academic or people of academic note in the economics world saying, yeah, we followed this, and boy, there it was, and sure enough. And so we're in this release language period that will continue from August 22nd all the way down to October 25. Most of the release language in there is going to be dominated by economics, but you note we also have all of the emotional release language showing up now around the Kennedy deaths, around all the other major news items that are happening. It seems that there's a qualitative, palpable change in the nature of the language that is surrounding us and that is bombarding us from all of the media. Based on even 2 weeks ago, people are able to now sense this once it's been pointed out to them that there's actually two basic forms, building tension language and release of emotional tension language. And we're in the release period where everybody's, you know, crying and weeping and wailing and venting out and expressing. That's going to continue until the 25th of October, and then we're all going to take in a big gasp and just go, because something's going to occur that's going to bump us into emotional building tension language that will be very steep, very short-lived before there's another, or short-lived before there's another release period, but it'll be very intense. As the period we're in right now is very intense. Now, the intensity that we're going to experience as we get closer to October 25th is going to involve earthquakes and some more military action and some very large storms that are going to hit the U.S. and cause problems. But underlying it all and affecting everything will be the impact on the dollar and the markets. And then really from November 4th or so in our work here until November 2nd or 3rd of next year, 2010, over the course of that almost a complete solar year, the dollar as currency will in essence pass away.
Wow. Well, you can't say that it isn't time.
That's for sure. Actually, it's past time. Most paper currencies historically last between 58 and 72 years, so ours is a little long in the tooth, and they've been keeping it going with extraordinary measures. We're going to hit hyperinflation with simultaneous deflation.
Yep.
It's going to be really strange because we're going to have very expensive food and energy, anything dealing with calories. And that's what we've been calling the future economy, is a calorie-based economy.
I'm just going to break in here just for a sec and let the audience know, if you really care about this station, switch on over to the secondary stream, because there are so many of you tuning in right now that you're crashing our mainstream.
Oh.
So what you might want, no, it's okay, it's fine, but you might want to move over to the secondary stream or one of the other streams. We have many for just this kind of emergency. We love you, Cliff. Always have. You're
okay,
a bonus to everything you do. God bless, and keep on trucking. Here we go.
All right.
So let me complete that thought real quick. Anything based on calories in this next year sometime will progress into a noticeable period of hyperinflation. Calories come in the form of energy to heat you, energy to move your butt around, and energy to make your butt. So anything you can eat or put in your vehicle or heat your house with eventually is going to start costing serious dollars because the currency will be dying, not because they will become so more dear. But we're also, as a side effect of this, going to have shortages, because a lot of people won't be shipping stuff into the United States. We won't be the consumer of last resort anymore. As our economy crashes, the world is going to have to readjust very rapidly, and it's going to put us into kind of a lurch. Not that, you know, we don't deserve it for following these stupid fools from the Federal Reserve all this time.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's a whole other conversation we can have.
Isn't it, though? Jeez, yeah.
I think people are waking up to the fact that the Federal Reserve is neither federal nor a reserve.
And it's a criminal cabal, in my opinion.
Yes, exactly.
Yes, yes. They need to be investigated, and those that we can assume are mostly innocent need to be merely imprisoned.
Exactly. And also, you mentioned the powers that be a lot, and I think it's important for the listeners to realize that there is a shadow government, and there is an elite that is pulling the strings of just about everything. And that in my own opinion, this could range from, you know, the deaths of the Kennedys and so on, to every war that's ever occurred for profit.
Oh, I agree with you. At least since we know pretty sure since at least the 1800s and known as the fruit wars.
Yeah, yeah.
In Central America, that it's all been corporately controlled. And I agree with you. I'm pretty sure that one of the last legitimate, emotionally clean presidents we had, that is to say, you know, he may have been relatively dirty in some respects, but was emotionally for everybody, was JFK. And I'm quite certain it was the powers that be that had him offed, because he sat up and said two things to him. Federal Reserve's got to go. We're going to make our own money. And I'm going to tell people all about the space stuff.
That's
in fact,
right.
He made a deal with Khrushchev for us to start moving into our planetary consciousness era. And, less than 30 days later, within a lunar month, he was dead.
Yes, absolutely. And the oil industry and the rest of it has held any kind of progress on free energy or anything that's been developed or back-engineered or developed on our own through Tesla's research for over 60 years.
That's correct, yes.
And so we've been living in a world that has, like, horse and buggy. The equivalent of living in a horse and buggy, because it can be metered, it can be sold, and it can be...
They can get power over you from it.
Exactly.
Yes.
And all of these Wall Street ups and downs are just designed to pump... They're pump and dump operations.
Yeah, oh yeah, it's an emotional roller coaster designed to keep you focused on the activity of the ride and not the people that are maneuvering the levers, yeah.
They get you to put the money in, and then they take it out, and then so on and so forth. So there's an extremely wealthy, small group of elites who are, you know, basically controlling the world. And
let's stop for a second, though, and examine some of this idea, because it's really interesting, especially as it relates to some of the work. Now, bear in mind that in the early 90s, I was just your regular old techie, geeky guy with his head in the software. Couldn't have told you that you know, a Rockefeller from a Rothschild. You know what I'm saying, right?
Me too.
Okay. And so you come along and you open up this thing and you say, my, that's a real, I think, you know, bit of string tangled up in there, and you start unraveling it, and all things lead back to essentially the powers that be, and this idea that they control the planet, no matter where you start, whether it's chemtrails, whether it's manipulation of currency, or any of this stuff. Death of Kennedy, it all leads back to the same thing.
Absolutely.
If you keep investigating, as does some really smart people like Catherine Austin Fitz, Solari Group, right?
Yes.
She's a former Reagan administration individual who
one of my favorite people.
Yeah, she's just absolutely great. She's a real smart woman. And
absolutely.
She left because I think, in my opinion, it was a combination of the corruption and the stupidity, but in any event, she's come to the conclusion that everything comes back to the contact issue, or what we call the contact meme. That is to say, contact between Earth humans and any other form of consciousness outside of Earth, which you have to get, now you start getting into all different kinds of definitions, whether it's an ET, interdimensional, or all of that, but we don't really care. We look at things at an archetype level.
Right.
One of the things we've discovered here is actually it's starting to appear in the data, especially in this run, and I'm going to write about it in my Space Goat Farts subsection of the next report. But we're starting to get indications here that the powers that be are hoisted on their own petard. They've lifted themselves up on their own shoelaces, because here's what they've done. They've condemned the majority of humans to grubbing around in a pollution-filled world based on fossil fuels, while for the last 60 years, they've been very successfully demonstrating and building the next generation of hyperdimensional kind of energy forces, right?
Yeah.
In all of this. But get this. Earth is currently what's titled called a class zero civilization. We exist on our planet. We're barely aware of ourselves as a planetary mass. We don't really have outposts on other planets, but we're just starting to get out there. The next stage up from a 0-0 state is to become a class 1 civilization, and that is where you're pan-planetary within your own solar system, and you're starting to step outside of your own solar system. Mm-hmm. Now, bear in mind that, and then let me continue. The class 2 would be getting into other parts of the galaxy. Maybe you would go into other solar systems nearby and so on, and then a class 3 would be a pan-galactic civilization where you would be clear across the galaxy and this sort of thing. Mm-hmm. Now, our current level of thinking with academia is that that can't happen because you can't carry enough rocket fuel. However, here's the deal. There exist already in the universe now multiple, probably billion, class zero civilizations like ourselves, most of which likely self-destruct because they get to the same place as us, with their planet all polluted and all weird kind of energy sources and all this sort of thing, blowing themselves up and, you know, succumbing to their own emotional problems. But there's likely thousands, if not millions, of class 1 civilizations, and perhaps a few class 2s and a couple of class 3s, at least within our galaxy, or within the Milky Way galaxy, of which we're now becoming a part. Different subject entirely. But in any event, so get this. If class 1 civilizations are out there, they're not going to mess around with most class 0s. Why should they get involved with the intertribal warfare, basically, right?
Right.
But the big clue for them that a new class 1 is emerging is the ability to do what? Well, to manipulate a hyperdimensional material, if you will.
Yes.
Okay?
Yes.
And here's an interesting thing about hyperdimensional activity. It's as though you're on a trampoline, and we're a little tiny marble on an infinitely stretched trampoline. And if we make a movement, the whole trampoline vibrates. So the minute we start messing with hyperdimensionals anything, we are basically sending out a signal in wavelengths that we don't yet really know how to measure or perceive, but that many others do. And that's what's drawing all the UFO activity.
Yeah.
So it's the back-engineered, hidden, black ops, shadow government pouring billions of dollars, trillions of dollars, into hyperdimensional, hyperspatial math and machines in the past 60 years that's drawing the UFO activity to us now, drawing in all of this intergalactic awareness while they're trying to keep all of us ignorant about what they're doing, and at the same time trying to deny that we're under the umbrella of repeated contact from class 1 civilization. And so the more successful they are, the more they're screwing themselves by putting up these huge flares saying, look what we're doing.
Absolutely, I agree. Now, ironically, one of my guests in this month is going to be Andrew DiBasiago, and he was drawn into one of the early black operations, Project Pegasus, as a genius, and it involved the chronovisors and time travel and future and past looking glass technologies and actual travel to other places. And one of the places that he claims that he went to was an underground base on Mars. And Richard Hoagland and as several others have indicated that there already exist places on Mars and on the Moon and some other planets, and that we can already go outside the solar system. And
I would reckon that that's, in my way of thinking, that's clearly plausible once you get beyond the concept of rocket fuel as your source of energy and start messing with the hyperdimensional reality, then time and space are not barriers anymore.
Exactly. And the whole rocket fuel thing with NASA is just a hoax to keep us in
focus,
the dark
right.
with smoke and mirrors.
Sure. Don't watch what's going on in my left hand. Only watch my right hand over here. Yeah.
Exactly. So.
And all that's breaking down in our linguistics, in our projections. We've been seeing this since probably 99 or so, a real escalation in stuff that eventually got to the point where I had to create an entity, which is basically a conceptual box into which put related subjects. That just to handle it all because it was starting to take over all the other entities. And so, for instance, we have entities that are like the Terra entity that model the planet and the the pollution environment and so on, and entities for population and so on. And they started to get really filled up with all of this hyperdimensional UFO kind of stuff, and it was like,
wow.
I got into a little snit and had to go back and sort everything out, and I came up with this entity that we called the Space Goat Farts, because it was so much officially denied and unknown, and there's a whole lot of stuff, you know. Well, basically, there's this little story that I tell about it, and that is that, you know, we had to have an entity name. We were sitting around, and my associate here, Igor, he was throwing out a few names, and I didn't like him. And I said, well, what we have to do is we have to acknowledge that everything in here stinks. And he said, well, what do you mean? And I said, well, in this entity is all the stuff that's officially denied, that, you know, raises, doesn't pass anybody's smell test, is all the disinfo and so on.
Right.
And that's when I thought, aha, I know what would smell across the whole planet, a giant space goat fart. And, of course, if there are giant space goats, that's how they travel. You know, second law of motion. For every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction.
Oh, my goodness. Jeez. So that entity is coming up quite a bit.
It's grown almost 10,000% since 99.
Wow.
I mean, huge. And the contact meme within it is growing. The associated areas of hyperspatial math, hyperspatial physics, hyperdimensional travel, just discussions on time travel, all of this stuff is just growing exponentially. So we're at what's known to the economist and others who deal in graphs at the knee of the curve. We're about to go vertical to the point where it'll double every couple of days and keep going, and then pretty soon it'll be on everybody's lips.
Well, of course, now the scientists claim that there's an event horizon, and that's their version of the Mayan 2012 calendar. You know, that...
the Kurzweil approach to the singularity kind of thing.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. I actually think we're in a race. I think that as a collective group, what we call Terran humanity, not Omni-humanity, because that includes all humans that are off the planet and may come from elsewhere, but Terran humanity is in a race at the moment.
Yeah.
We're racing down these last few years, and we have to make a leap.
Yes.
We're either going to leap ourselves into a Class 1 civilization and rapidly expand, or we're going to die off. And there's a whole lot about that that just does not make a lot of sense relative from the viewpoint of the powers that be. Because we all, even going back into like Buckminster Fuller's work in the 30s, he came to the conclusion that there was an invisible hand that was ruling all things and trying to control all the planet. And I've done the same kind of research and came to the same independent conclusion. And I'm a researcher, and I like math, and when it all adds up, it's like, okay, this makes some sense. And I've come to the conclusion that there is indeed a cabal of the political elite that we're calling the powers that be, that for their own screwy purpose wishes to maintain most of humanity at a class zero state.
Oh, absolutely.
But at the same time, that really doesn't make sense from their, in my view of their position. And my view of their position is that, well, if you have X amount of power with 7 billion people, imagine how powerful you might be with 25 billion people spread across 3 or 4 planets. Mm. You know, you'd be that much more powerful if we maintain the same pyramidal power structure. And it may be that there are barriers to us becoming a Class 1 civilization and maintaining basically what amounts to a feudal, dictatorial or patriarchal slave economy.
Yes. Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
In other words, maybe only sovereign, rational individuals acting in their own and collective self-interest can actually form a Class 1 civilization.
Well, you know, you mentioned it before, and I think that we can't throw out the idea that consciousness is going to play an active role in whatever whatever Y in the road that we meet. It's spoken of by the Hopi Indians and the shamans and the Native Americans all over the world, and they all talk about the idea that we are on the verge of a leap, and we may have been on the verge of a leap in the past. Some say that was Atlantis and that we self-destructed because we were unable to make the leap at that time. We don't know if we were there.
There's so much we don't know. I agree.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
But I've heard this as well, and I've even had friends in all kinds of strange places. But I happen to know some guys that are in the indigenous persons movement in South America, and they actually are repeating the phrase Homo luminescens, the shining ones.
Yes.
And that's the what we have to leap into, is that that level of new state of consciousness. And I agree with them. There must be that.
I agree with it too. Yeah, I do too. And I, you know, there's a lot of material that I research that has to do with the idea that that luminescence, you can relate to, well, some relate it to mana, mercury, the alchemical gold. You know, I mean, you can relate.
Oh, sure, sure, and you can take it off from my viewpoint, because my heritage or tradition is in the martial arts. I take it all the way back to Ni Kung and the idea that we're going to have a blending or a compression of yin and yang energy, and it's the blue, you know, yang is basically blue light energy, and when it is merged with the yin, which is more of a white, you end up with this very shiny, pale blue kind of luminescence, which in fact can manifest. You know, humans are quite strange. There's the if you go and hunt on YouTube, I don't know if it's available anymore because they keep taking it off. And by they, I mean the people that censor YouTube. There are actual videos of a festival in India. I'm trying to think. It's one of the festivals of the Tears of the Ganges. But in any event, within that festival, there's a fellow with a high-definition camera. This was about 4 or 5 years ago. It was a fairly bulky thing. But he's walking along filming for a documentary, and he films these three sannyasins, and these are people that devote themselves to yoga and take vows of poverty and so on. And as nightfall, these three beings start glowing. And in fact, you can actually see that they're humans that have gotten to the point where they're emitting visible light on the crowd. And the crowd accepts it relatively benignly, and as everybody is, you know, laughing and thinks quite jolly. And I was just astounded. As near as I can tell from my research on it, the video is not a computer generated or anything. And I know of individuals that have some level of interesting powers. Let's say. And in fact, if you go into the history and you read like the Science of Yoga, this is well documented. Comes under the area of the siddhis, which are those powers that you get when you reach a certain level of consciousness and practice.
Yes, and of course all the paintings, the ancient paintings from the medieval times with the halos and the glowing golden light and all that.
The etheric body shining from, you know, blessed individuals or people with a really good attitude, if you want to think about it that way,
Exactly, and that could be a level of achievement that we are headed towards ourselves. And then, of course, you have planets that are in the process of becoming suns. So, you know, evolution is everywhere.
It's all fractally interrelated.
Yes, yeah.
Unfortunately
absolutely.
For us, getting back to the nasty fellows and the powers that be, we see that since the, at least in the United States, since the 30s or 40s, they've come up with this plan to fundamentally block the ability of the human individual to ascend to those states by putting pollution into their pineal gland. And the pollution comes in the form of fluoride or these days some of the carrier molecules that come in from the antidepressants.
And the chemtrails.
Oh, yeah, exactly. And then all of the other stuff, the electromagnetic vibration alteration stuff and so on.
And the harp.
Yeah.
You know, blowing away the magnetosphere, I mean, for crying out loud, what is, you know, that can't be a good thing.
The magnetosphere, I believe, outside of the explosions that occurred with the nuclear tests, or they weren't tests, we just shot some rockets up for some reason and blew them off. With nuclear bombs in the 60s, I believe. In any event, outside of that, I'm of the opinion that the magnetosphere issues at the moment relate to what I've called the big squeeze that's coming in from galactic center.
We have to
understand that the Earth and our solar system, we're not part of the Milky Way. We've never been part of the Milky Way. And we're only now just starting to become part of the Milky Way, and curiously, the Mayans may have just been absolutely spot on in picking 11/11/2012, December 21, 2012, is that point at which we become captured. Mm-hmm. And the real thing is that from that point on, astrology is no longer the same. We're going to have alignments and so forth that have never occurred in history before.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to be part of a new galaxy that will have levels of unknown energy, but certainly we can guess we'll have higher levels of photonic energy, magnetic energy, etc., that'll be affecting us. And I think the magnetism is already affecting us. And at this point, the magnetosphere may just be being impacted by this giant, crushing, ubiquitous magnetism that we're in at the moment. And that's why we don't see the ability to measure it. If you take out your multimeter or your any kind of magnetic sensing apparatus and you start trying to measure the background radiation, you're not going to notice that it's significantly larger and higher. However, we can take some objective measurements and say all of the planets in the solar system are heating up. The sun's been extremely quiet. Even humans are acting as though they're in a giant magnetic squeeze, and we got a lot of us that are just kind of blowing our corks and going a little crazy.
All over the place.
Yeah. It's not an accident. I mean, it's not just people behaving oddly.
No. This is all part of a cosmic energy shift that is affecting all of us, and soon we will all have that awareness, and we're kind of on the, I would say we're just a little nanoparticle ahead of the crowd, but what your reports seem to do is bring us to a point where there will be intersecting moments when the sheeple, the people who were hypnotized by the powers that be, are going to start to get it and wake up.
Yeah, and that's sort of good and sort of bad, because there will be a whole lot of them waking up right away, and having gone through the experience myself, I had the luxury of taking that pill and taking 10 years to swallow it, right?
Yeah, me too.
These poor fellows will have to, they'll be awakened by circumstances as opposed to their own universe prodding them, and they'll just have to swim,
Yeah. Well, that does seem to be the way it is. Then you've got, I just want to throw a couple of other little monkey wrenches in there. You've got the poles, which are, slated to shift at any moment. They could actually reverse. They wander all over. The North and South Pole are wandering now.
And we've had some large jerks in them recently. Very, very alarming, yes.
And what happens when that happens, and there will be no gravity for a period until the poles are reestablishing themselves, what does that do to the plates? I mean, there are all kinds of speculations about tidal waves and plates moving and so on and so forth.
Right.
And then 2012 is the maximum solar flare period.
Right.
And so we have a
if I'm correct, though, in my understanding of what's going on, that there's this larger area of a magnetic field that we're moving into, actual really dramatic events will come when we start to leave the midpoint, after we've crossed the midpoint. Because it's sort of like the building tension and release of tension sort of phase, in the sense that we're building up to this peak where everything's getting crushed down by the magnetism, including our own planet, which causes, by the way, the internal part of the planet to be squeezed by the crust pushing on it. And, of course, the hot magma and stuff, it doesn't like it. And it's a hydraulic fluid, basically, so it's going to try and find all the little leaks that it can to escape. Really, I think that the more dramatic part of it all will come from 2012, from solstice on 2012 onward.
I agree. Although I think that we're going to have plenty of drama before that.
Oh, there's no question about that, yes. But from a planetary viewpoint, from the actual crust and that kind of stuff.
Yes, absolutely. I agree with you wholeheartedly. Now, you mentioned some interesting things that there's one thing that you mentioned in one of the shows. I think you were on Coast to Coast. And you talked about people disappearing. Now, it was in 2010, and I think you mentioned things like there's certain people that are known, like Cheney was an example, and certain military people around him simply seem to vanish into a parallel dimension. And then
we don't know where they're going, okay?
Yeah.
So it's speculation. At the archetype level, we have a meme for that actually descends out of the larger entity of the powers that be. At a primary level, that the descriptor is disappearance. And then the associated other levels are vanish without a trace, and more repetitious words about these guys just basically going poof. And then we get into, as we drop down into a level, we get words that literally describe a fellow in the midst of a small crowd of like bodyguards, and between 1 second and the next, between one step and the next, the whole crowd just is gone.
Wow.
And now, as for Cheney, that's just an example. I mean, we could be so fortunate that would occur, but, reality, every time you look at the future, you change it, so I doubt that's what will happen. But we're actually starting to see some of those disappearance memes show up in this year, and they accelerate all the way through into what we call the alien war years of 2011.
Oh, no, what is that?
Well, we don't know. We have a high, because it's in our longer-term data, we get the high archetype level words, the descriptor words first. and then it takes a longer time for the details to pile underneath the and raise it up like a pyramid, so to speak, right? So what we have now are some descriptors that are coming, the words are starting to show up in reality, so we know we're on the right track, and the descriptors read alien wars. But now, let's be real clear about this, because here's the situation. NASA has actually brought out some of those words this year in their description of what they're going to do to the moon with this projectile. And they're going to bomb the moon on October 9th, 10th, or 11th, something like that, of this year, with this kinetic weapon that they're going to, theoretically, the way they've described it is kind of like an afterthought. Oh, yeah, we're going to send up this satellite to go and look at the North Pole of the moon and go whiz around and take photos. And, oh, by the way, we're going to use the rocket that we sent it up there to blow a great bloody hole in the moon to see what's down there. And see, so it didn't, the words didn't make sense on any level, really. And they violate all kinds of treaties, and it brings up all kinds of weird issues, mysterious issues, and so on. Yeah. But the language of interplanetary and war, bombing, etc., is starting to show up. So it may be much more of that on a huge level, for instance. You know, we could, for instance, have an outlier, maybe the whole planet of humans here gets really freaked out when we send off all of our nukes out into space. Well, that might be alien wars if we did it over the course of 2011. I don't think it's going to work out that way. I think the language will be a lot more complex, and it's showing up relative to the contact meme. So there's anybody's guess as to what's going to occur, but as we get closer to 2011, we'll get more detail, presuming the Internet continues to function and we get through this next year, which will be very, very, very rough.
In fact, George Orr's column today on urban survival, he was writing about the fact that the net could be shut down at any time. And I just wanted to get a plug in for his column because I read it every day, and even though I have no money to invest, it's a priceless information.
Oh, yeah, you don't read it for that reason.
No.
He thinks of himself as this great planetary economist, and he's totally wrong. In our viewpoint, George is actually probably the equivalent of a great thinker in the Revolutionary War, like Thomas Paine or somebody right?
Yes, very much so, and very funny, too.
Yes, a little bit of a Will Rogers and, maybe Robin Williams thrown in there, you know.
Yeah, I don't miss his column. I catch it every day, so I highly recommend it to all of the listeners who are listening.
And that's his daily column at urbansurvival.com,
Yeah.
And he does discuss, we frequently have these he's been with me on this since the year 2000, and we had these long discussions, and he'll boil them down into some kind of understanding for humans and put them on his column. And it helps to augment our work because I'm sitting here with my heads down to produce these reports and don't really have the time to get out there and flesh them out for everybody.
Yeah.
And to a certain extent, he keeps me focused on what people really care about because I get all, oh, isn't this cool, and start following a thread that, probably no one other than myself really, really cares much about. Like, I'm all thrilled at the moment because I got a call from this guy who's a scientist in Europe, and he was saying that, I'm going to tell you right now, you were exactly right about the Large Hadron Collider. And I thought, how is this? And way back when, and I'm going to have to look it up, I think it was in maybe 2007, perhaps, I'd written in one of the reports that the Large Hadron Collider was not going to be a problem for people, that they wouldn't be able to get it to work, and that basically they were going to, quote, drop their oranges, as though a juggler trying to juggle a bunch of oranges, right? And I think I even referenced that there were five oranges in there or something. Well, the way our work progresses, I really hadn't given that much of a thought, other than the fact, of course, the Large Hadron Collider is not working. They tried to get it working back a year ago, and they broke it. And how did it break? Well, it turns out that what actually occurred, and we're only finding this out now, was that some orange piping connected to some other device that was colored orange let tons of liquid helium out in the areas that it should not have. And so they dropped their oranges on the floor, so to speak.
Wow.
And the floor got super cold, and their electricity went and got a little bluey. And now they're at the point where they're trying to pick their oranges up, but even so, they're still now saying it's an indeterminate future as to where they might actually try firing it off again. Now, what's curious about this, though, is the guy who was telling me this, he's Teutonic, was very precise in what he was saying. He repeated several times that it was his understanding that the reason that the oranges were dropped, so to speak, was because they were trying to rush this thing to completion.
Yeah.
And since this is the powers that be, This is the equivalent of the building of the pyramids. I kid you not. They put more money into this and more energy directed only from the powers that be. I mean, how many of us on the planet got to participate or vote or even knew about what was going on with this thing? And they've been, you know, just rushing it through. And they had some screwy ideas, and we won't speculate as to what, but they've been derailed because they had human error when they were rushing it through. Or, if you kind of believe the other way, because consciousness field didn't want it to fire off.
Right, right. Very good, very good. There are many forces at play here.
Yeah, and for us, unfortunately, it took, you know, well over a year before we found that we were, in fact, accurate.
Well, one of the things that I wanted to mention briefly that relates to your idea of a space war is that... you know, there have been plans on the drawing boards by the powers that be to create a fake space war and to have some kind of triumphant, E.T. race. And that would be their way of revealing, number one, what they've been up to to an extent, and of controlling the population from that point forward.
So, trying to control it.
Yes. I don't think you can do that.
I've been speculating on that all day and doing some thought experiments on that as to what would occur when the revelation comes out. Because bear in mind, 85% of our population in the U.S., quote, believes in UFOs. thinks that this is a real phenomenon.
Absolutely.
So, but our society certainly isn't acting that way. We're not pursuing free energy. We stop at the go along with the ridicule that the powers that be pump out on crop circles, even though that's undoubtedly a class one civilization using our planet for some purpose, maybe even trying to contact us, right?
Yeah.
So, I don't believe that they'll be successful in attempting to control the population, and indeed, they may be screwy enough to try their giant, space battle, fake invasion to get us all to fall in line.
Well, 911 was a good example.
Yes, they're not, you know, these guys are, they think they're very clever, but really they're transparent and quite stupid. And they also, curiously, have to follow this strange rule that they have to announce what they're doing.
Yes, yes. And it has to have some kind of numerological or astrological significance.
Yeah, along that line, watch out for the 7th of September and the 9th of September.
Okay. It's just before my birthday.
Well, they're both occult number sequences that are very hot.
Ah, okay.
So it wouldn't surprise me at all to find some kind of a global terrorism sort of thing, and especially in northern India. Or in India, in any event, we may see some kind of increased powers that be activity on those days. But it could also happen here in the U.S. as well. I don't suspect it's going to be a tipping point or any of that, although the next big problem we'll have appears to be some storm activity likely to hit the East Coast on the 13th to the 15th of September that'll cause lots of evacuations.
Wow.
And then, of course, we're all in release language, and we still keep going until October 25th. Something occurs then, and then we get into the jolly days of the death of the dollar. What everybody needs to recognize is that you can step back from it. You can deliberately remove your emotions from participating in it, direct yourself to more of your own activities, which actually aids the planet.
Absolutely.
You know, every person that is not acting like a nut helps the planet progress.
Well, you know, Cliff, this hour has flown by, and before we go off the air, I want you to tell people where they can get your report and find out more about your project, because this has been a fascinating interview, and I'd love to have you back again.
Sure. Yeah, no worries at all. love to come back and chat. I can sit there and BS with the best of them.
Yeah,
anybody that wants to have a look at our stuff can go to halffasthuman.com, and we sell the reports there. The next report with the new data set that we've been running here will be out sometime after September 15th. I'm going to try and make it as close to the 15th as I can, because we need as much in the way of heads up as we can for October. All kinds of strange stuff is coming.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for being a guest, and I will be purchasing your next report, because you've been kindly keeping them at a reasonable cost for us little people, and that helps get the information out there too. So I just can't say enough good high praise for the work that you're doing, and keep up the good work.
I appreciate that, and it's basically all us humans got to stick together, all us Terrans, you know, because pretty soon it's going to be Terrans staring somebody else right in the face.
That's right. All righty, thanks, Cliff.
Okay, talk to you later.
Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Bye.